Do we have a deal, Mr. Reagan?
You know, I know this steak doesn't exist. I know that when I put it in my mouth, the Matrix is telling my brain that it is juicy and delicious. After 9 years, you know what I realize? Ignorance is bliss.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Despite the fact that it was an R-rated movie, The Matrix always seemed more like a Shawshank Redemption, Schindler's List type of event, where there may have been some suggestive scenes, but the message was very thought-provoking and poignant enough to make a true believing member of the church perhaps listen to the spirit of the law vice the letter of the law with regards to R-rated movies. The whole trilogy was a cult favorite of mine, as well as millions of other people around the world. Very much akin to Star Wars, many members of the church could find a lot of symbolism within the context of the film's storyline with relation to the church and the gospel. As a once struggling gay believing member of the church, I've always loved the scene where Morpheus asks Neo to take the red or the blue pill. The red pill meaning he will now go down the rabbit hole and leave the world as he knows it and live without the false lens in which he has been raised to believe is reality. And also to fight the inhumane injustice that has been heaped upon his people for many, many years. The blue pill was symbolic of going back into the cloudy fold of numb inhumanity, living and working under false concepts while an organization above you reaps your hard work by sucking your life's energy to fuel their own empirical and dogmatic worldviews.
After all these years, still be here. After all these years.
Sound familiar? Well, at the time of my true blueness of Mormonism, I always looked at the red pill as a hybrid mix between baptism and taking the sacrament, where I rightfully decide to stand up to the evil that rules the world and not live under the laws and constructs of man, but that of a higher and holier power.
I don't remember when we wild and young, all that's faded in the memory. I feel like somebody I don't know. Are we really who we used to be? Am I really who I was?
And shit, times have certainly changed for me and many of my friends. Taking the red pill out of the Mormon Matrix has been an incredible experience. I think it's very easy for people when they first leave the church to overvalidate the positivity in their lives as a means to showcase to their former parenthetical brothers and sisters that they're happier than they've ever been, or that life is better than ever, or that all is well beyond well.
And somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, I heard it once, oh, I heard it once, in la la lullaby.
I'm glad when I hear someone say that. I hope they're being honest, because in truth, sometimes life can totally suck balls. It's sometimes harder to deal with trials without a clear construct of what God is, and the easy escape of a blessing can help compartmentalize all of our cares away while we let Jesus take the wheel. I don't have that in my life anymore. What's replaced that is a sense of clarity, solidarity, and an ignited inner fighter that tries to take life head on as best as he possibly can. The clip you first heard was the scene of which the character Cypher has made a deal with the white shirt and tie clad Agent Smith, again, freaking ironic, where after struggling 9 years outside of the Matrix, the pressure of life has gotten to him, and all he wants to do is feel numb, remember nothing, and feel like all is well in the Matrix's falsified perfect little bubble. I'm sure many of us, after having left the church, have experienced that feeling of wanting to go back to a place where there's absolute clarity and ease. Reminds me a lot of the mission. As 19 or 21-year-olds, we feel as if it's the hardest thing ever to survive the treachery of 18 to 24 months of service in the Lord's vineyard, when in reality it's such an organized, easy, assisted, regulated experience. Life afterward almost makes the mission seem as simple as Disneyland. And I love Disneyland. Who doesn't? But after a while, the waiting in lines, feeling like cattle, the high cost of living, the fake fronts of all the cast members, the children who are wearing matching outfits and all talking, walking, and acting alike despite the fact that they're from different countries, not to mention the mass amounts of symbol worship throughout, gets pretty fucking old. Naturally, the people who do decide to take the red pill usually end up feeling a sense of duty to make sure that they extend the offer to those who are still trapped within the Matrix to leave it themselves. Perhaps it's the every member a missionary type of programming we've had since we were little children that evokes us. Perhaps it's just sheer anger and the extreme care to protect those that we love to leave the Matrix. Perhaps there's some sort of higher power motivating us to outreach to those that are still being sucked dry. And despite the hot-button topics, the crass humor that the infants can sometimes display, I believe that one of the biggest reasons we do what we do is based out of outreach. Even if it's just to speak to our inner Mormon child, helping repair ourselves without the harsh influences of the Matrix distorting our own worldview, perhaps some feel as if this is our calling. More and more of these podcasts and these articles and blogs are popping up and becoming mainstream. I'm hoping this one goes out to those that have not yet left the church. In particular, those that have or may suspect that they have queer children.
Religion is a breeding ground where the devil's work is deeply
you see, I don't have kids. I'm not married. I'm nowhere even close to that. But being in the business that I'm in, I encounter thousands of people weekly. Sometimes it's even in the mediums that I work in that people are connected to me without having even met me. Not a day goes by on my Facebook that I get a message from gay Mormons who just need someone to talk to. Someone to say that life gets better and things do improve. Occasionally, I get messages from anonymous profiles of teens who are struggling with their identities while trying to navigate some sort of awkward, impossible sense of balance in a Mormon upbringing, and my heart truly breaks for them. Like I said, I may not be a parent, but I was once just like these kids who needed someone to reach out and help them, and unfortunately, at the time of my adolescence, you either had active LDS people offering reparative therapy ideas, or people trying to solicit you for underage sex. I would assume that I've already gone through the hardest of hardships with regards to understanding myself and who I am. I'm one of the lucky ones. I survived. I didn't have the strongest, most devout Mormon parents, and for that, in hindsight, I'm forever grateful. My choice to leave the church was more painful for within of myself because I truly did love everything that I had experienced up to that point, despite the fact that my eyes were shrouded through a lens of a Mormon utopia. I did believe I was a part of establishing Zion on the earth and that I had a true calling to fight the good fight and that somewhere in the premortal existence I had accepted the trials and temptations of same gender attraction. Looking back at that, I almost laugh, but I think it's more cringeworthy than anything. What I'm getting at is that I was once there. I was one of those people that could justify almost any actions and means, even if they did seem surface-level bigot. I believed in the church. I believed that the gospel was true. I knew that no matter what we were doing, even if it felt weird, it was just a trial for us to overcome because God was testing our worthiness and our willingness to follow His will through the voice of His prophets on the earth today.
God knows that I've disappointment from his name.
And looking back at that level of folly, I can't help but feel bad for those true believing members that are caught between a rock and a hard place. I believe most members are truly wonderful people, however misguided that they may be, and even more so however much they think that I'm the misguided one for leaving. I again was fortunate enough to have the lens of Mormonism cracked when the Asterisk program was initiated. For those of you who don't know what it is, it basically labels admitted gay or struggling active members of the church as potential liabilities with the risk of pedophilic tendencies. To this day, I get so sickened when I think that I even remained active for some days, hell, even some hours afterward. Acknowledging that the church has its reasons that only God understands is a crock. I was lucky to have such a catalyst. Not even Prop 8 could pry my fingers away from the testimony of the true church. But now, we have the new policy with regards to gay members of Mormon families. The smarter, more educated infants have discussed this topic several times over, and I'm not going to go deep into it considering everybody and their mother knows about it at this point. What I will discuss is the negative effects that the implementation of said policy have caused to so many people. Now, this is something that is very near and dear to my heart, because it affects the lives of every single gay, lesbian, transgendered, queer, and questioning individual that's caught in the middle between being a worthy member of the church or living a more authentic and honest life.
Carefully cut the wire and wait. Life is a series of narrow escapes.
This terrible conflict that the church stirred up has pushed away many to the point of breaking. Some have left the church, some have lost their testimonies, some have gained a stronger sense of believing that being a bigot is God's way. Some have rejected their children, or their parents, or their siblings, or their friends, or even their roommates. And some have even decided to take their own lives to avoid said conflict.
But something happens. Or I guess I should say, something happens and I get worked up, and this is something that I want to talk about. And November certainly did that. You know, as a proud father of a proud gay son, I will continue to fight against this institution who is an enemy to people I love.
I want you to remember these names: Wyatt Bateman, Stockton Powers, Michaela Ferguson, Alan Schwind, Raymond Lamson, Ian Williams, Anthony Bennett. These are the names of but a few of the lives lost by Utah suicides. All seven happened within 8 days of each other shortly after the implementation of the November policy. All but one were LDS, and the one who wasn't lived in a town that was 90% Mormon. These are the only names that we can mention publicly, as their parents have given us a blessing to reveal them. From the day of the implementation till the very end of January, 34 deaths by suicide were reported. 28 males, 4 females, 2 transgendered, 28 of them from Utah, 4 from Idaho, 1 from Arizona, and 1 from New England, all LDS. The leading cause of death in Utah for children ages 10 to 17 is suicide. Utah suicides for ages 14 and 19 were some of the highest rates ever recorded in the country. And that is only reported suicides that happened and occurred up to 2014, which are the most recent numbers available to the public because Utah legislation tends to try and cover and bury how many people are actually taking their lives, especially LGBTQ people. It's a travesty that there's so much shame and cover-up with the deaths of these innocent people. Sometimes parents don't know that the kid is LGBTQ, and when they do, they will rarely admit it. They don't want their child's lasting legacy to have the stigma of gay and suicide. Also, the Utah Deputy of Health only considers three methods of death suicide, unless there is a suicide note, which there rarely is. The three sure suicide methods are asphyxiation by hanging, self-inflicted gunshot wound, and poisoning. This doesn't include overdose or drinking things like bleach or rat poison, which are very common amongst the youth in their suicide attempts. So if a kid purposely overdoses on drugs or swallows a bottle of pills, it's not suicide in their records. If he or she jumps off a bridge, walks into oncoming traffic, drives their car into a tree, steps in front of a train, all these things have been reported. All these things are ruled out, and they are considered accidental deaths. When and if the family writes an obituary, they rarely admit to LGBT or suicide. They say things like, died peacefully in their sleep, cardiac arrest, etc. Since the family writes the obituary, they can say whatever they want. And it absolutely makes sense as to why they would want to withhold said information. Sometimes it's for the privacy of their own family, but I can't help but wonder if it's also the social and cultural pressures that we as LDS people have always felt in striving to keep up an image of perfection or something close to it.
I don't know anymore what it's for. I'm not even sure if there is anyone who is in the sun. Can you help me to understand? 'Cause I've been caught in between all I wish for and all I need. Maybe you're not even sure what it's for any more than me. May God's love be with you always. May God's
I've heard stories of policemen going to crime scenes where it was an obvious suicide, and the parents begged the officers and medical examiners to claim it was an accidental death. We've had people chase down these stories but can't get a police officer to talk to them about it, afraid of losing their jobs because they're falsifying public and police records. We've heard stories from ER nurses in Utah hospitals that beef up their staff the weekends in October and April of General Conference. They have seen and are preparing for the rash of suicide attempts that inevitably happened after those kids listened to the horrid anti-gay messages from our church leaders. But again, none of these nurses will speak about it publicly because they could potentially lose their jobs. The fact is, church leaders and government officials know there is a problem, and there are a lot of people working hard to cover it all up. I've seen recent articles linking the escalating suicide rate to Utah's altitude, air quality, kids are on digital devices too much, etc., etc. But none of those things explain why the numbers have almost tripled in the past few years. Utah's elevation, air quality, or kids on devices haven't tripled. There are places in the country with worse air quality and higher altitudes. They don't seem to have the same suicide problem. The only explanation is the increasingly harsh and hateful anti-LGBT rhetoric from both our church leaders and local communities that is then regurgitated at home by believing LDS parents. The suicides have paralleled the leaders' anti-gay teachings. They just won't admit it. And because Utah is such a theocratic state, government officials are afraid to speak against the church. The LGBT community, especially the LDS LGBT community, is working 24/7 to counteract the messaging that is killing our kids. We literally don't stop.
And I will hold you tight like the moon in the arms of the sky. And I will keep you warm. I will build a fire in this house.
So many of my friends have spent every free minute they have on this issue. It feels like they're constantly cleaning up the mess that the church keeps making. I know that might sound harsh, but to quote my friend and fellow Mama Dragon Wendy Montgomery, I have been boots on the ground for almost 5 years now, giving everything to keep these kids alive. I see the causes of the despair these kids are feeling. I hear the church's messages through my son's ears. I have sat in the offices of some apostles and church PA. They know these stories. I have cried with them. They know. And yet the messaging only gets harsher. I struggle with anger and bitterness towards them, and I don't want to feel that way. I love my church. But they could literally slow this death march with just a few words over the pulpit. I have begged them, literally begged, to give a conference talk or write an Ensign article. They have yet to do so. End quote.
I'll keep a light on to call you back home. And I'll build a fire, you fetch the water, and I'll lay the table. And in our hearts, we still pray for sons and daughters. And so to come. For now we're still young, we're just building our kingdom, but it's all to come. And I'll build a fire, you fetch the water, and I'll lay the table. And in our hearts, still pray for sons and daughters. And all those evenings out in the garden, red, red wine, those quiet hours turning to years. It's all to come. For now we're still young.
And still young we are. For some strange and miraculous reason, if you're still listening to this excessively long podcast, perhaps you have felt confused, frustrated, hurt, victimized, and even stuck. Torn between the beauty and power of a church that you've been raised to believe is true since you were a baby, and knowing that things are not right within it and that people are suffering. People like Wendy Montgomery and the rest of the Mama and Papa Dragons have worked incessantly to be a safety net for the youth that are prone to jump and run away from life's pressures that the church imposes upon them. To me, they are the valiant warriors in this battle for the lives and sanity of so many youth. Sadly, the numbers, power, and influence that the Mormon Church has is a battle that they know they cannot win. They're not trying to wage war, but rather, they're trying to prevent those that feel isolated, alone, and even afraid to find community and a life filled with love, acceptance for being who they are. And they're doing it with such amazing success because I am a firm believer that if we can save but just one person from making such an extreme decision that not only impacts their future but also the lives of all their friends, family, and loved ones, then it's a victory. Despite that, my heart breaks for them, for they are the people, like me a few years back, that are still active and potentially believing members that attend church weekly and are still forcing themselves to behave and act in a way that forces them to live amongst teachings and principles that are riddled with hate and bigotry. I sometimes don't understand why they are such gluttons for punishment. I can only assume that it's because their hearts are so big that they will not leave the Mormon Church until every person is saved. The silent victims of the church need people like them. Now, I've spent time with the Montgomery family and know that Wendy herself goes to church wearing a rainbow-colored ring in hopes that maybe a man, woman, or child will see that as a potential gateway and source for connecting with somebody and finding support. There are many others that do similar things while still attending church. If this is truly a modern-day spiritual war, then they are the best spies that we have working from the inside. I suppose both are necessary. Ultimately, what I'm trying to say is, I wish that we, as former members of the church, can stand together as a voice of unison, being more of a vocal presence for those that are feeling as if they have to silence themselves in hopes to survive within the confines of a Mormon community. I wish we can pull out our brothers and sisters that are stuck knee-deep in the trenches of bigoted filth.
Held on as tightly as you held on me. Held on as tightly as you held on me.
I don't envy those people. In fact, I feel like they're bearing the burden of something way too heavy for any one person to hold. I feel so bad that they feel as if their calling to stick with the church that rejects them and hurts the people that they love the most is something God-given. Wouldn't it be easier to just leave and join the ranks of those that are former Mormons in helping create a bridge that is both a vocal and visual safe passage for those that are suffering within the walls that house the golden statue with the trumpet in hand? I wonder if some people stay because of pressure and past convictions or frustrations and confusion or fear that their children could fall victim to the evils of the world. Yet what I don't think they understand just yet is that there are so many wonderful people outside of the church. And in fact, the church isn't as big of a place as most within it think. It just casts a big shadow amongst its members because it's monopolized the heavens of those who have partaken of the celestial Kool-Aid.
As far as the church goes, I think if they continue to plant their flag against the LGBT community, it's going to continue to hurt. That's bad. That's just a bad, bad move. And I feel bad that they have to take that stance because they're going to be behind with everything, you know?
And now, a scenario. There once lived a happy couple with three beautiful children. They have lived in the same neighborhood all their lives. They know each and every single one of their neighbors by name and have always felt welcomed in their homes. All of the kids play together and participate in various activities. This couple goes to bed at night, grateful that they know that their children are safe and living in an environment that is conducive to them being the best of society. They truly believe that they live in a modern-day Zion. But then one day, the mayor of the town changed the law. Because of it, one of their children are now considered less than those of other kids. The neighbors start to talk and gossip and desire not to have their own offspring engage with any of this once happy couple's children in fear of an unlawful influence. Their marked child has now become a recluse, a square peg in a round hole, a queer piece to a puzzle that is no place for them. They feel less than, stuck, and unable to see past the suffocating streetlights that illuminate their once beloved neighborhood. As a couple, they feel torn because of nostalgia. How could they possibly leave their neighborhood after so many years? How can they assure their children would be safer outside of the confines of said Zion? They toy with the idea that perhaps if they weather the storm and bite their tongues, that the neighborhood will change and once again welcome their children with open arms, and all will feel safe again. But looking into its history, one can easily see that it will not be the case, at least for many, many years. They also start to notice that one of their other children have begun to treat their special one with aggression and hatred for being a little different. The whole family unit is coming apart despite the neighborhood boasting its top priority above all else to strengthen the family bond and create a perfect Christian atmosphere. If money weren't an issue, and you were one of the happy couple in this tale, what would you do? The answer is glaringly obvious. You'd leave. You'd move out of the neighborhood in an instant because your children come first. And this is where the church, I mean neighborhood, has horrifically gone wrong.
I can't change, even if I try.
A bit of a simple story, I would admit, but in all honesty, I think the case for all of us staying inside the confines of the Mormon Church with gay brothers and sisters is just as simple. We've been preached and preached and preached that our families are top priority, and many have let their children lay waste because of it to isolation and judgment because we do what grown old white-ass male privileged sexist racist men have been preaching in all of our lives and neighborhoods for what seems like a fucking eternity. In closing, I wanted to quote my friend Wendy one more time. She had recently discovered that a good friend of hers that has been working within the LGBT Mormon societies had attempted to take his own life. She was frustrated. She was angry. She also just returned from a funeral of her son's best friend. How much longer can I do this? I can't believe this is coming from our church. Well, in my humble opinion, this isn't our church. But we can create something that's safer, better, and brighter if we but all make a decisive choice to reach out to those who are suffering and stand up for what is truly right. I know that I have been guilty of really just wanting to rid myself of Mormonism and wash my hands of it altogether. But how can I stand idle when my brothers and sisters are still suffering? And even more so, how can I stand idle when my brothers and sisters are inflicting pain upon others that are similar to me? I would venture to say that there is a 100% chance that you have a gay questioning or trans relative. And in the slim chance you don't, you're just not looking hard enough, or maybe they don't feel comfortable to reveal that side of themselves to you. I, to this day, remember holidays where some of my active temple working LDS relatives would say the most hurtful and damaging homophobic things. As a boy, I would get the worst anxiety and to this day feel the results of its PTSD. My relatives are great people. They mean well, and I know that they don't believe themselves to be bigots. I don't think deep down that they are. But how scary is it to know that we as LDS folk are ignorantly hurting so many people who slightly differ from the bulk majority? Why is it necessary to stay in a neighborhood or church where people are being mistreated and marginalized to the point that they are killing themselves? Even if you don't have a child that is gay, and even if you don't hate gay or trans people, why would you want to even be a part of an institution that does? If we can just remove ourselves from the situation and see things from 10,000 feet in the air, all of the working parts moving like ants, we would see not only the error in the direction in which we are headed in, but also many more glorious pathways to Rome and some of the best and brightest people walking on them to join. Parents, I know that you love your children. Leave this place before it becomes an issue where your child will surely feel the eventual marginalizing value within. And even if you don't have gay kids or loved ones, which is crazy talk to me, any place that cuts off some of its best and brightest is still a darn right piece of shit institution. Let us fight this on our own front. Let us help those that are struggling in a silent battle and that are stuck in the trenches. When I first left, I was still a true believing member and felt as if life would always be darker and less inspired outside of the Mormon fence. But my perspective changed greatly in time. I am happier than I have ever been despite life's natural ups and downs. But I no longer feel the hate rhetoric of a church that preaches against the one thing that motivates my ultimate happiness, and that's to marry a good husband and raise a family with him. If you could only leave but for 1 second and taste life without the filter of the Mormon matrix telling you how you should feel, you would know that life outside of it is worth a damn. If you could leave, you would see there is much more of us than there are of them. Much, much more. And any place that makes you think otherwise is an absolute crock of shit. I hope that people like the Mama Dragons, whom I love and admire so much, won't have to stay inside the Matrix covertly amidst so much negativity and death. They won't be able to until more of us stand up for what is right and raise a harmonious voice that can penetrate the limestone walls of the church, so that every struggling gay youth living in a forced, quiet desperation can find a way out.
Related to the church, what I'm learning the further and further I get out is the less relevant they are to the real world. And I know that's probably difficult to conceive of here in Utah, because they have immense influence. But and I'm in Mesa, Arizona, and they have influence there as well. But the further I get out, the more I realize they're really small. And so they're going to lose numbers. They're going to continue to lose numbers, but they will, percentage-wise, they're still going to have about the same influence as they do now. I'm hopeful it will have less impact and cause less trauma to people, and more people will find real happiness outside of its influence.
The life you were born to claim, and the water will be paralyzed by the courage you
If you are a youth who is struggling and somehow managed to hear this, I just wanted to let you know, sorry for all the swear words. You'll be using them sooner than later anyways, believe me. But joking aside, I have one final thing to share with you. Some years ago, I was in the same position as you were. I was a believing member of the church. I tried my best to follow the commandments of God. I served a mission. I did everything that I thought I needed to do in order to gain sufficient strength to fight the temptations that I believed that I had accepted in a previous existence. And despite that, I fell to the depths of suicidality, and it wasn't pretty. The best dream that I could have was taking my own life, and I would have many of them. I don't know what it was, and I don't know how I got out of it, because I was isolated probably more than you even are. I didn't have a podcast, I didn't have YouTube videos. All I had was myself and my thoughts locked in an apartment, alone. And perhaps it was a mental breakdown that protected me and saved me from taking my own life. It gets better. As cliche as that might sound, as hard as it is to accept in your current state, someday you will flourish. Think of yourselves as being inside of a cocoon, where sooner than later you will break through that hard shell and that close confined space, and you will be able to fly. I hope you will. Oh, and on a side note, not only will you find friends in a community, but someday you're going to have the opportunity to meet people that give you that warm, fuzzy feeling on the inside, that give you those butterflies. And you're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to have your heart broken. You're going to break many hearts. You're going to feel love and how strong it is. It's the strongest thing you'll ever feel. It's stronger than any Holy Spirit moment you'll ever experience within the walls of the church. It's addicting and motivating and everything. And also, the love that you feel towards your friends and the love that they give back to you is something stronger than you'll ever have encountered before. There are people for you, and you will find them. You just gotta hold on. No, that's enough. I want you to remember these names: Wyatt Bateman, Stockton Powers, Michaela Ferguson, Alan Schwind, Raymond Lamson, Ian Williams, Anthony Bennett, and so many others that will go unnamed.
Zaya.
Crazy circumstance, I knew his life deserved a chance, but everybody told me to be smart, but instead I chose to use my heart. Now the joy of my world is in Zion. Surely come, see life for you, my prince, has just begun. And I thank you for choosing me to come through unto life to be a beautiful reflection of his grace. See, I know that a gift so great is only one God could create. And I'm reminded every time I see your face that the
for listening to Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.